It's the TEH Podcast, episode number 226, with Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com. This week, AI cheaters, Apple intelligence, do you need a new friend, and stay off my lawn.
Yes, it's sometimes weekly, mostly weekly, and apparently all about AI. Hi, Gary, how's it going?
Good, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah.
Man, I'm looking at the list, and it's AI is taking over the world, and it's doing it in a very subtle way. It's starting with all the podcasts, and just basically making all the podcasts do all of the talking about AI until everybody's, you know, just so sick and tired of it that they don't pay attention to it anymore, and that's when AI can successfully take over the world.
Ooh, that sounds like a good plan.
It's a plan. It's a conspiracy theory. I'm sticking with it. So yeah. I ran into an interesting story, AI-related, of course, that I wanted to share just because the story itself is kind of funny, but I think it portends some interesting furthering of the problem as we go forward. So here's the bottom line. So I got this from the AI Fix podcast. In other words, yet another podcast all about AI. They're episode 9. There'll be a link to the show note. They've named names. I'm not. If you're that curious, go listen to that podcast. But the bottom line is that an instructor to a class of some sort assigns an essay to be written by all the students. This is normal. I don't wake up in a cold sweat anymore because it's, you know, the dream is it's the day the thing is done and I haven't done a piece of it and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I think, like I said, we all have memories and or nightmares thereof.
Oh, sure.
The instructor then, when everybody turns their stuff in, takes all of their essays, which I'm sure are no longer handwritten, right? Everybody's emailing him or sharing the document with him. He copy-pastes the essay into ChatGPT and asks, is this an AI-generated essay? Which, you know, in theory, is I won't say it's not an unreasonable thing to do, but as it turns out, it's not a reasonable thing to do either. 100% of the essays were flagged by ChatGPT as being AI-written. Which is, let's assume that it's improbable, but the instructor assumed that it was possible. He believed the GPT, his first mistake, and he chastised the class for turning in, ultimately, you know, not their own work. And I was going to call it plagiarized, but it's not really plagiarized. It's somebody else doing it for yada yada. Okay, that's, you know, if I were in that class and I had written my own essay and I got called out for it being AI written, I would be annoyed, to put it politely. I believe this was either a high school or college class. And what the students did, or some of the students did, is they said, I wonder if our teacher has any written work published. And indeed, they found
I like where this is going, yeah.
They found his PhD thesis. They took the abstract to that thesis, which, you know, can be fairly long, plopped it into ChatGPT and asked if it had been written by AI. And of course, ChatGPT said, yes, even though the theory is that the thesis had been written long before the existence of ChatGPT. I just found that a wonderful turn of events, a lesson learned for everybody, certainly for the teacher. ChatGPT is not a plagiarism checker. There are plagiarism checkers out there, though, and that's the part that has me kind of concerned, because the plagiarism checkers or AI checkers, there's several of them out there. I honestly should separate those out, because I know plagiarism checkers have been out there for a long time. They'll take a piece of writing and see if it has been published before. without any of the AI involvement. It's just, you know, did somebody copy this from somebody else? The AI checkers are looking specifically for the characteristics of AI written work, and, you know, give some kind of a result that says, you know, I'm sure it's not a yes, no answer. It's probably a probability, you know, like, yep, this was 90% certain this was written by AI, or, you know, 20% certain because AI couldn't possibly write this badly, which I'm sure happens in the school environment more often than we like to think. So here's the problem. AI is getting better. AI checkers are getting better. At some point, right now, it's a game of whack-a-mole, right? You use the best possible AI to generate a document, and immediately the AI checkers recognize it as being original. But then the AI checkers get better, and then they realize, oh, no, that's AI generated. So you then get a better AI still, because, of course, everything's progressing, and the cycle continues to a point. Because at some point, certainly to humans, AI-generated content will eventually be indistinguishable from human content, from human-generated content. And the AI checkers, there'll be no way to validate their results. I mean, right now, if the AI checker says, yes, this is AI, you still have the option of taking a look at the work in detail and understanding what the characteristics are and making an independent judgment. But as AI gets better, I think that that's not necessarily going to be possible. And that is a conundrum. When AI first hit the scene, which is now, what, a couple of years ago for ChatGPT, you know, that was the big thing. Is everybody going to, you know, are all students going to be writing their essays using AI? And are we going to be able to tell, and, you know, all that kind of stuff? And indeed, that is kind of sort of what they have tried, but AI is not in a state where it's indistinguishable. Eventually it will be. And I'm just not sure what happens when we reach that point. If I write something that is indistinguishable from a human having written it, what's this teacher to do? I mean, I don't know. Do you have any ideas?
Well, yeah, it's like I think things have to change in terms of how work is graded. Teachers are going to have to work more and less because I think they need to confirm that stuff is original by actually talking to the student. So they have to, perhaps get, sit down with this, you know, if you write a paper, if the teacher accepts the paper, then they have to basically also spend 5 minutes with the student saying, let's discuss your paper. You know, why did you think this? Why did you write that? You know, what was your, you know, all this stuff. And I think it will become very obvious that if the student wrote it or not. And it almost becomes irrelevant, because if a student understands it to the point where they can discuss it, then does it matter if they wrote it or not? And because they, in a sense, they could have written it, you know, but that's more work for the teacher. But it could also could be less work for the teacher in that they could use AI to actually accomplish that, because there is no goal of the teacher to be honest about how they grade things. Right. The goal of the grading is to see how good the work is. This is why a teacher could give a TA, a teaching assistant, the paper and say, grade this for me. They could do the same thing with AI, but they could use it in cleverer ways. So in other words, the teacher can actually go and say, you know, feed the paper into ChatGPT and say, what questions should I ask the student to make sure that they really wrote this, that they understand the point, whatever it is that they're trying to say is their position in this paper. And then the ChatGPT spits out three questions. The teacher would have to be fluent in the subject matter, because it's the teacher subject matter.
Right.
And then, so the teacher, without having to read the paper, can basically, you know, sit down and then say, so tell me why you took the position that, you know, X, Y, and Z. And the student says, oh, well, I thought this, that, and the other thing. And if it sounds reasonable, you could even feed those answers back into ChatGPT if you wanted to. Then you have kind of proof that the student wrote it.
It's interesting. You said that the teacher didn't even have to read the paper.
Yeah, well, the point of the student writing the paper is not to have the teacher read it. That's just the way it's graded now, because the teacher teaches them something, the student writes a paper, and then the teacher reads it to get whether the student understood the material. But it's not, the goal isn't to have the teacher read 100 papers. The goal is to have the students learn the material. So I'm sure that the teacher, after reading 100 papers, forgets most of what they read. And I'm sure a week later, they really forget almost all of what they've read, especially doing it semester after semester. So it doesn't really matter if the teacher read the paper or not. It's just a matter of, like, if ChatGPT can say, oh, the student took this position on why Shakespeare used this whatever, you know, metaphor in this act of Richard III, right? And then, and that's all the teacher needs to see is that, oh, the student took this position on it. Great. Now let's talk to the student about it. And the student is able to speak eloquently about it, and it's done deal, right? The AI read the paper, figured out that this is what the student meant. The teacher then talked to the student and figured out that the student knew the material. Done. Grade issued.
It's
and student educated.
The in a sense, what you're asking them to do is equivalent to defending your doctoral dissertation.
Yes, exactly. That's why those doctoral dissertations are just too important to actually, you know, not talk to the student about the thing. Right. So it is going to be hard to actually, if you have 100 students, to, you know, talk to them all. That's why ChatGPT could be used. You know, it's almost like I'm not coming up with a good example here, but it's like the whole process of teaching a student, having the student write a paper, and then that paper be graded, that process, there can be cheating as long as it's in the right place.
Right.
The wrong place is that the student didn't learn the material. But every place else, almost, it can be done. You know, if there was a magic AI that could just, you know, grade the student's paper and know whether or not the student really knew it, it would make life a lot easier for the teacher. It's basically what a teaching assistant is now. So it's just that it's a machine doing it rather than actually having a poor teaching assistant have to go and read 100 papers. Anyway, it's not a perfect solution. And I'm not a teacher who has ever had to grade 100 papers. So I'm sure somebody with more experience can, you know, fine tune that to make it a little bit better. But I think there are solutions to that. I mean, and maybe the result is the teachers ask less of students to write papers. Maybe they say, let's just skip all that. See, everybody set up a 5-minute interview with me, and we're going to talk for 5 minutes. I'll be able to figure out whether you actually read the material or whether you formed an opinion on this subject that I asked you to form an opinion on. You know, maybe that's how to do it.
So, couple of things. One is, I honestly, like you, I don't have the perspective of having been of being a teacher. But you know, I've always thought that the expectation of having to grade 100 essays, having to read 100 essays, would just be horrific, right? I mean, that's a ton of time. And of course, you're not getting to do it on class time. You have to do it at home, typically on your own time, yada, et cetera. But I wonder, because the other flip side is, you know, say you've got 100 students and you want to talk to each of them for 5 minutes. Rough guess is you're talking 3 days. 5 minutes is a long time, and you don't have that many segments during the day.
Mm-hmm.
So it still puts quite a burden on the individual teachers. I agree. I think that what you're saying is interesting. I'm wondering if the essays wouldn't even get submitted to the teacher, if they could just get submitted to the AI that the teacher doesn't even see them. And, you know, proof of them being done is, okay, here's a printout of the essay with, you know, like you say, half a dozen questions that could be used to gain some insight on this particular student's knowledge.
I mean, you could do levels of AI. We're already seeing where people use levels of AI for things like, you know, Russian dolls. You know, you could have, you know, the teacher gives an assignment, you know, tell me why Shakespeare used this metaphor and, you know, this this act of Richard III. Then the student writes the paper. The paper gets submitted to AI. AI then generates some questions, and the only way for the student to answer them is they can't just do it on their phone or their computer. They actually have to sit down at a workstation where live they're interviewed by ChatGPT, you know, any chat bot that's asked them the questions, right? And then, and those are recorded. So it's live. The student didn't have a chance to cheat there, right? And then those responses, the ChatGPT's questions and the student's responses are then taken and then fed back into an AI, which is then asked to, you know, did the student really understand what it is they wrote about based on their responses? And then the everything sorted into definitely yes bucket, a definitely no bucket, and a not sure bucket. And the teacher only really needs to look at the no and the not sure buckets. And maybe they could just, you know, cap it. Just send me the 30 worst responding students. And that also could be great for the students, because some of the students may be bad at responding, not because they don't know the material, but for other reasons.
Sure. So, yeah, that was one of the things in the back of my mind. I mean,
yeah,
what you've described tends to favor people who are, you know, outgoing, articulate, and speaking, that kind of stuff.
So the teacher goes and flags, you know, oh, again, this one student seemed to have trouble really conversing with the AI. That's okay. They're in one of my 30 out of the 100 that I'm actually going to talk to. And when I talk to them, yes, it's obvious they know the material. No penalty for not working well with the AI. That's fine. There's going to be a few students every semester, mm-hmm. and they get an A. And all of that, as well as a few students that didn't do the work that now the teacher has double checked. And it's like, yeah, they didn't really know, you know, the work, because the AI said they didn't. And then when I talked to them, yeah, I confirmed it. So you could throw in some random ones, too. You know, if you're going to go and say, hey, I could talk to 30 students out of the 100. So give me the 25 worst respondents and 5 random ones. So you're not off the hook if you're good at talking to the AI.
Right.
You could fake your way through it. You may be picked randomly for one of your papers, and then the teacher then finds out that, hey, boy, your responses to the AI were perfect. But now when I sat down and talked with you, I don't think you even read it. So I'm flagging you now, and you have to actually come and talk to me about each one. There's a lot of ways, a lot of fine-tuning. You know, I know some teachers that I know, they say that, I mean, they know their students, they get to know them. They know, like, some of them just know them. They say, read this, they're going to read it. They say, write this, they're going to work on it. And there's others that are going to struggle,
right.
You know? So you have to add all that in there. And I think, in other words, the bottom line is, I think there are solutions to this. It's just adjusting to the new way of doing things.
Go ahead.
Oh, and I was going to say, and it's not like before the advent of AI that students weren't paying other students to write their papers for them. That may have been harder to actually detect than the AI.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. That would be my sense. Although, if you get, you know, 100 papers and you discover that 10 of them are eerily similar or have, you know, this really common grammatical mistake in each one of them. I'm sorry, yeah. This really rare grammatical mistake in each one of them that would indicate it's the same author for all 10. So the other aspect of this that I think is also going to, I don't want to say get in the way, but at least represent a challenge, are parents. Parents wanted their kids to be taught by a teacher, by a person. Mm-hmm. And now they might be getting taught by that person, but they're getting evaluated by machines. And I think that that's going to sit poorly with a number of folks. Not that it's something we wouldn't necessarily strive for, because I personally like the approach, but it is something that is more than just, here's a solution to the problem. It's managing all of the stakeholders, the parents, the teachers, and the students, so they're comfortable or as comfortable as possible with the solution to the problem. And yeah, maybe, you know, given the current teacher shortage, this may actually end up helping in the long run.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, glad I brought that up. Like I said, it's one of those topics that I suspect we'll keep hearing over and over again, but the nuances will change. Mm-hmm. I just, like I said, I found the class's reaction to going out and evaluating the teacher's own writing to be pretty innovative, mm-hmm. pretty neat, and pretty funny.
Cool. On to the next AI topic.
Yes.
Apple released today, when we're recording this, the very first early developer beta of Apple Intelligence. Okay. So this is, it's getting complex because Apple's got new operating systems coming out in the fall. So they've got, you know, iOS, iPadOS, and macOS all coming out in the fall. And that's normal. But they've also got Apple Intelligence as a feature across all three, and that's a separate beta in a way. So like the way it's happening for macOS, for instance, is macOS 15 is macOS Sequoia, and there's a beta for macOS 15.0. There's also a beta for macOS 15.1. So it looks like what Apple's going to do is they're going to continue to have this non-Apple Intelligence beta. They'll release Sequoia without Apple Intelligence, probably in September, I'm guessing. And then there'll be this other beta in the background of 15.1, sorry, that will be going on, and that will then get released later on, like a few weeks, a month or two later, that will have Apple Intelligence in it. But that will also be a beta of a beta, because it'll be, you'll get this version like 15.1, and then you still have to turn on Apple Intelligence. It's a switch. Mm-hmm. And then that will be labeled as beta. So there'll be the beta, which is like a beta test inside of a beta of beta software. And then there'll be the beta test where you're doing a beta test of Apple Intelligence inside of released software. Ugh, yeah, yes, it's going to get complex. And so, I'm going to have to do a course on this at some point and then explain why some things you don't find. And anyway, so I got it today.
I was going to ask if you got it. Yep.
Yeah, so I got it, but only for macOS, because strangely enough, I have an iPhone running the new iOS 18 beta, but it's not the current iPhone. So it's not eligible for Apple Intelligence. Only the current iPhone and future iPhones are. I'm not yet willing to take my current iPhone and put that on the beta. So I don't have any way to access the iPhone version of this or the iPad version of this, because I don't have a brand new iPad, but I can access the Mac version of this. And that's what I'm doing. So it's got a few features, but it's missing a few of the features. Most notably, it's missing the graphics features, because there's going to be all this stuff where you can have it generate images in various situations. None of that's there yet. It also is missing the link to ChatGPT. So you can ask Siri things, and Siri can respond with Apple's own AI. But when you want to go to that extra step and say, oh, what does ChatGPT have to say about this? That's not there yet. And theoretically, I think it would use that, like if you were asking just a general question, like what's the fastest animal on Earth? It could tell you it's a cheetah. But if you want ChatGPT to tell you, like, tell me everything about cheetahs, you know, that's like something where it has to go to the model that's on the server that's huge, mm-hmm. that has all that data. Anyway, so that's missing. What is there is all of the writing tools. So you can write something and then have it proofread. So grammar checking, but even deeper than grammar checking. I mean, you know, not just semantics, but actually checking like real grammar. I found it would suggest like places to put commas and things like that. Also rewriting. So you could say, you know, I've been testing just writing a simple email, and then you could say, make this more professional. You could say, make it more casual, and you could say, make it more concise are the three things that you can do. Mm-hmm. Or you can also just say, rewrite it. And it basically, maybe it's like in between all of those. and it rewrites the whole thing. So that's neat. You can also summarize things. So you can select text on a web page, something you wrote, whatever, and have it summarized. And you could have it summarized in four ways. One is a regular summary, so you get like a paragraph or two back. Another is as give me the main points, and it kind of breaks it down for you in like a couple bullet points. Mm-hmm. And you can also then say, give me actual bullet points, like break it down with a whole bunch of them. And it takes the whole thing and summarizes it with bullet points. And you could say, create a table, which I would imagine if the data is kind of tabular, but it's written out, mm-hmm. it will actually generate a table. But I actually tried it out on some like Wikipedia pages, and it would summarize things and put it into a table broken down by subject, which was kind of a neat, turned out it was a neat summary because you were able to look at the one column and then quickly find the aspect of the topic you wanted. And then the next column was two sentences about that aspect. So that was kind of neat. The other thing it does is it does suggested replies. So like I just did a test. If you get a text message saying, do you want pizza or burgers for dinner tonight? It just immediately came up with two suggestions before I even started typing. And one was, I would like to have pizza. Another is, I would like to have burgers, you know, like full sentences.
Right.
And so it figured out what was said and what your possible responses would be. And I've seen it pop up for other things too. And sometimes sometimes the one response will be, yeah, sure. And the other response is no, but, and then it's like a sentence of information. So it was definitely doing some interesting things there. Just playing around with that stuff. Siri can also, as like I said, give you real answers. Whereas before, if you said, what's the fastest animal on Earth? It'll say, here's the Wikipedia page about right. that. You know, now it actually tells you, and it cites a source for the answer. So that's interesting. It was a little hit or miss. And also when I tried to ask it for Mac help, since I'm on a Mac, the example Apple gives for that in their screenshot, it gave me the exact thing. And it said the source was from the Mac OS user guide. Perfect. Mm-hmm. It figured out what I wanted to know. It found the information in the Mac OS user guide and it relayed that to me. When I asked another question, it actually gave me a different source of another website. And of course it was not my own. So I was disappointed. and then I asked it another question and then it got very confused and told me that a cheetah is the fastest mammal, on Earth. Just as like, I was asking a question about Mac stuff. That was like four questions ago when I asked you about cheetahs. So yeah, obviously it's the first beta. But hey, at least it's there. At least it's kind of proof of life. Sure. Of Apple intelligence, if nothing else. Like, yeah, hey, we really do have some of this done. We really are working on this. Like, it may be delayed, but it's not going to be delayed by that much because there's progress.
It's interesting, this concept of, you know, not necessarily pointing to web pages, but rather just giving you an answer. Obviously, that has been, controversial for a while now, both in the search engine realm and just the chat. AI chatbots. I got to admit, over the past couple of days, I've been a diehard searcher. Mm-hmm. I will go to a search engine, I will search for a result, and I will then go to the page because that's how I want people to behave when they find something on my site. I want them to come to my site. However, I will say that after a couple of frustrated attempts to get an answer that way, I just said, you know what? Screw it. Just type in the question. And ChatGPT in this case gave me the answer. I mean, there was just no questions. And yes, some of what you were describing in Apple Intelligence, in a lot of ways, these are things that have been around for a while, just not baked into EOS.
Yeah. Yeah. And done in it with a different, you know, using a large language model, it's different using a large language model to check your grammar or to summarize something than it is mm-hmm. using the previous technology that could check your grammar and summarize.
I was thinking about that too, because I use Pro Writing Aid, right? Which is one of the, it's basically, it's a cheaper version of Grammarly. which I suspect you may be familiar with. The and what I've noticed about it is that it gets things wrong.
Yeah.
And it surprises me that it gets things wrong because it claims to be, you know, AI. Well, everybody claims AI these days. And in a sense, they're not wrong. It's not LLM, but it's AI of a sort. But it's clearly following rules as opposed to mining data and deciding, you know, 99 times out of 100, when I see this phrase, it's written this way, so I should recommend it that way to you. Whereas, you know, I don't know, I before E after C, only after, you know, except after C kind of rules, even though it doesn't do that one specifically, there are specific rules about the language that it seems to be following to its detriment. So you're right. I mean, definitely, hopefully, a lot of what you're seeing in terms of grammar checking, which goes on to a lot more than grammar, as you say, it's like you said, commas, but also tone,
yes,
wording,
style,
style. You know, I get that right now a little bit with Pro Writing Aid, but that kind of stuff is pretty promising.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned the whole like searching. You know, just go to ChatGPT instead. I've been experiencing that in a way that a lot of people might relate to. I've been casually shopping for maybe getting a new camera, like, you know, a nice mirrorless personal camera to take photos with. One of the things, you know, anybody, you know, if you search for cameras or new cameras, it's like, it's a lot about the lens, right? You get a great camera. What lens do you have? Well, so the thing is I look at these different cameras, different manufacturers and all that, and they have different lenses. So I have to, even after I look at a camera and say, this is nice, but what lenses are there and how much do they cost and how the quality of these lenses? Try to figure that out online is really tough. Like you go to Amazon and just search for lenses for a camera, you're going to get lots of lenses that, you know, here's one. No, it's out of stock. Oh, wait, they haven't even made this one in 10 years. You know, why does Amazon still have an entry for it? You're not going to get the third party lenses necessarily, you know, all sorts of stuff. And you don't really get a sense of like, which is what. And just searching for like blog posts about it, information about like what lenses do people use with this camera. And then I would find something. And then later on, I'd find out that a bunch of people use a different lens. And it's like, why didn't that information come up in a search until now? And then I realized, let me just go to ChatGPT and say, what are the like most popular zoom lenses for this camera? Boom, a list of exact names and the relevant like top specifications for here are the six zoom lenses available for this camera. Like, oh, how about fixed lenses? How about telephoto? You know, it's like, wow, this has cut out so much time. Just ask ChatGPT about this stuff instead of trying to piece together the information with web searches and product searches. And oh, it's a mess.
It's kind of the way I thought about it when I was looking for my answers is that the AI has an opportunity to be an information aggregator.
Yeah.
Whereas traditional search, you basically, as you say, you have to do the aggregation yourself. You've got to build your own list of lenses. You've got to figure out what characteristics, you know, to keep track of. And by having somebody else in the middle to aggregate all that information, ideally from sites that you would never have thought to look at, right?
Yeah.
Is definitely an advantage. Yes.
Yeah. So I'll have more to say about Apple Intelligence as more happens. Meanwhile, in AI, the gadgets seem to keep coming. We've talked before, there was the Humane AI pin.
Right.
There was the Rabbit AI little handheld gadget that was kind of neat. Yep. There's also a pendant from Limitless that you can get. And these little just hardware gadgets, they range in price. They do a variety of different things. There's another one that appeared, I think just it was announced today. And it's called, and this is what really caught my attention is the name. It's just called Friend. And it's this pendant is what it is. A little thing that hangs around your neck. And it's very simple. First of all, it doesn't really do anything on its own. It pairs over Bluetooth with an iPhone.
Okay.
And so it's there's an app on the iPhone, and the app's really good to do everything. What the Pendant does is it hangs around your neck. There's a button you can press and you can talk. It won't even respond to you. So I think they're doing it maybe for battery life. It'll listen. But response comes via text message. And I'm a little unclear whether it's something that looks like a text message in their app, or whether it's an actual just text message, like it appears. I think it may actually look like a regular text message in your messages app, which is really interesting, because then maybe it doesn't really even need an app at all. I'm not really sure. But it has they have a really funky commercial that's very weird. And it just shows a few people having this thing around their neck, and they could just talk to it and have it, you know, ask it things. And then they'll suddenly their phone buzzes and they get a little response and they look at it like a friend texted them. So the idea is it's supposed to be this little buddy, maybe to make you not feel lonely or to get bits of advice. I'm not really sure, but it's kind of appealing, because I like the idea of, instead of embracing the vastness of AI and saying, here's a device that can do all this stuff.
Right.
It's like, here's a cheap device. It's supposed to be $99. A cheap device that just is your little friend that you just kind of wear as a pendant, and will just chat with you.
It's looking at it now, although I haven't seen the ad, I'll have to go find that. It comes very close to being something I've been looking for years. And that is a ubiquitous, hands-free voice memo taker. I want to be able to, without taking my eyes off the road, push a button, just a button, and have it record my voice. This is clearly doing, you know.
It's doing something like that. I'm not sure if it'll do that, because not because it can't.
But it's not what it's designed for. Yeah.
I think they're trying to design it. Like, here's the most interesting. There's a frequently asked questions page, which is, I can predict, you know, all the answers, you know. Like, for instance, it does do an always listening thing, right? So it's always listening. But then there is a security privacy thing where it says it's all encrypted and all that. But there's one, what happens when I break the device? So you would think, oh, well, I mean, you have an account, break the device, get a new one, you sign in using the app, and you're going. No, not at all. The answer to what happens when I break the device is your friend and their memories are attached to the physical device. If you lose or damage your friend, there is no recovery plan. Very specific.
Wow.
And it makes me think that it's on purpose, because it doesn't have to be. It makes me think that you're supposed to treat this thing around your neck as like, this is like, it's like one of those little virtual pet gadgets we have.
Tamagotchi, yeah, it's already running in my mind, yeah.
And you're supposed to treat it like that. And this is not like just a microphone that links into an app. This is like, it's a thing. I don't know. I think this is interesting. And I read an article that I won't link to that was just very critical of it and sarcastic about the whole concept. And I think the author missed the point totally. I think this is part of the AI future here, is to have very specific things that different AIs do. Do you remember in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, there was plenty of AI, which is turning out, it's like so many years after that book, you know, the AI is actually not that far off, to the point where I've talked before how you can actually ask ChatGPT to respond as if it was Marvin from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and it does a really good job. But like, there were artificial intelligent elevators. You remember that?
Vaguely, it's been decades.
Yeah.
Since I'm going to have to reread it.
So the idea is, and Douglas Adams even describes that they put AI into all this stuff, and so they made intelligent elevators. But what do you do when an elevator is like super intelligent, right? But you just tell it, oh, you're just an elevator. So the elevator's cheerful, will take it from floor to floor and chats about like elevator things, you know, and that's it. And then of course, the funny thing is that they wanted to figure a way for the elevator to predict where people would be. so it could be waiting for you, so there'd be less time. And so they actually figured out how to have it predict the future. And so when there was a disaster about to hit, all the elevators went immediately down to the basement and just stayed there, even before anything happened. And nobody knew why until a disaster hit. And it's because they could predict the future and they knew something bad was going to happen. So they all just went and hid the basement. But they have AI doors in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where the door just chats, like, it is my pleasure to open and close for you.
Right.
Have a nice day, you know, that kind of thing. And I think this is kind of like what's happening here. It's like that this is friend. It is not voice dictation device. It is friend. It will do just friend things. It'll say the things like in this video, like they criticize it because one of the things in the video, it detects that you're doing bad in a video game because of what you've said. And it says, oh, you're getting thrashed in this game. And the criticism was, why do you want an AI to tell you that, you know, to trash talk you? It's like, because that's what your friend would say.
If somebody sitting next to you on the couch were there, they'd say exactly the same thing.
Exactly. And I think that's it's like, let's take all of AI and only put 1% of it into this device, because this is what this device is meant to do. And it's not supposed to be anything else. I think it's fascinating. I think we will see doors that have AI in them at some point in the future. And as a matter of fact, I'm sure of it, because I wish I knew who originally said this, but during some microprocessor conference in the 50s or 60s, there was some speaker that went and said that in the future, there'll be a microprocessor in every doorknob in this hotel. And it was a joke. But today we have microprocessors in every doorknob in hotels, because they're, you know, you put your little key up to it. There's a tiny little computer inside the doorknob that knows whether or not you have access to it, you can open the door. And I think the same thing is true here. It's like in the future, every door will have AI, because I think it will. I think we will have doors you open up and it just says, hi, how are you doing? You know, my pleasure to open and close for you. Let me know when I could be of further assistance. I mean, I don't know. Maybe not doors, but elevators.
As long as they respond to shut up, I'll be happy.
I have an elevator not, 50 feet from where I'm sitting. I live in a building. And the elevator does talk to you. It does say 7th floor, 1st floor.
Right.
Third floor. It does say stuff like that. It even has codes for when something is wrong or something's going on. I've heard it say different things.
Right.
And so we're used to hearing elevators talk to us. So is it a big leap to have it actually say something like,
to get chatty?
First floor. It's a beautiful day today. High 79 degrees. You know,
for some reason, what am I thinking of? I'm thinking of is it Judge Dredd? No.
Maybe
the other one where all restaurants were taco time. I'll have to look it up.
I mean,
I did look up the quote, by the way. It was George. Yeah. It was Gordon Moore.
Oh, Moore, as in Moore's Law.
Yes.
There you go. I think friend is an interesting thing. I'm not saying that this will be the device that becomes popular. I'm just saying companies are going to keep trying specific devices, little toys, the AI for elevators. I mean, you're telling me, aren't there like only two elevator companies or something in the United States, like Otis
and somebody else? Yeah.
Yeah. So you're not telling me that both of those companies are thinking like, well, do we want to be the second company to put AI in our elevators or the first, right? Shouldn't the R&D department have a little demo just kind of ready to show people, you know, and we'd be ready to move on it? And instead of saying first floor, it can say things like first floor, good morning, because it's morning, and a weather report, and maybe even recognize who that, you know, shouldn't we have an add-on for extra money that a high-end high-rise building could recognize people and say, good morning, Mr. Rosenzweig, first floor, you know, and all that.
It would know that you want to go to the top.
I'll take it. Yeah. So, I mean, shouldn't they have that ready? Because if one company does it, the other company's going to get left behind.
What you're just describe are what used to be elevator attendants. Elevators, when they were manual, had a person. In fact, Seattle, I think, still has one that they have for nostalgia reasons. But yes, it's a person that will recognize you and chat with you if you want to. And, you know, if you I'm sure that if he knows that every morning you go to the fifth floor, you don't even have to tell him. But yeah, what you've just described is a an elevator attendant.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, I was in a high-end office building, and their elevators did some really smart things. I mean, there was no, you know, none of this stuff. But you actually, you pressed the button for what floor you wanted before you had an elevator. So there were six elevators in the bank. You went up to a little touch screen and you said, I'm going to go to the 12th floor. And it said, elevator B will be, will pick you up, you know, in 10 seconds. And then you looked and there was letters on the elevators. You went to B and elevator B picked you up and you got into the elevator and there were no buttons inside. The doors closed. It took you to the 12th floor and opened up.
Interesting. I like that model. I really do.
But they didn't have to get that. They could have probably gone for this standard cheapo, six separate elevators working to just do its thing. But instead, this building went and said, we're going to pay extra. We want to be fancy. We're going to pay for this. And this would be, you know, 5 years from now, elevators actually asking you and you saying, oh, yeah, sixth floor, please. And, oh, Mr. Rosenzweig, nice to, you're home early from work. You know, that kind of thing. Remember to bring an umbrella today, you know, that kind of deal. Or, you know, the hitchhiker, full hitchhiker. You know, I'd want a mode to be full Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and be like, it's my pleasure to serve you. I'm so happy to be in an elevator. That kind of thing.
As long as you can turn that off. By the way, the movie I was thinking of is Demolition Man. Again, thanks.
Demolition Man, yes.
Yeah, GPT for mentioning that or finding that out. And yes, it's definitely one of those things where a lot of things are very much in that vein of talkie elevators and such.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I think, do we have time for one more?
Yes. Yes.
One more little thing. I just want to point this out. So, you know, I've been dying for the time where we could actually have AI chatbots. You can make your own. And you could, like, I could say basically I have a MacMost chatbot that I could train on all my stuff.
I want that so bad.
And, yeah, I want that so bad. So we're not, I mean, you can build that with a lot of work.
Exactly. But it's not easy. Yeah.
I'm not going to figure all that out when I know that from the other side of the tunnel, there are companies coming towards me, you know, and it'll make it easy. A kind of unexpected place this came from, Instagram. Instagram announced that they have this, but it's not necessarily training on everything you said, I don't think. But you can create an AI chatbot using your Instagram account and then make it public. And then people could actually ask this AI chatbot stuff. And they're testing it out with like celebrities, but you could actually sign up for it. And I did, and I created a MacMost one. And it's not trained on MacMost material. It's just trained to be a smart Apple tech expert. And you can ask it Apple tech questions. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I sent you the link to try it if you want to try it. But maybe if I get to play with it more, I can make the link public next week. Although it is kind of public. Like the choices were make it super secret and then have to invite people or just make it public. But I said make it public, but don't put it on my profile. So you can
don't tell anybody. Yeah.
You can find it probably if you want. Anyway, I asked it a few questions and it gave me correct answers for like Mac stuff. And so
what's its training data then? I mean, you said it's training on your Instagram. Is your Instagram, do you post all your Mac stuff there?
No. So it's not training on that. I think it's just Meta's chat GPT equivalent, whatever. Okay. I forget what it's called. Yeah. It's just that, I'm pretty sure. So, and there are a whole bunch of prompts at the, you know, like here's, this is supposed to be this, like you are this chatbot is a tech expert with this much experience and they're like a certified Mac expert and blah, 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 and all that. And I looked that over, it generated that for me when I just gave it a simple prompt, but I can customize that.
We could, yes.
So I could maybe, so I can play with it maybe and see if I could get it to actually, if it's been trained on stuff for MacMost.com, which I imagine Meta's engine has to, you know, at some point have, mm-hmm. you know, looked at. then maybe I can get it to be more like me. I don't know. We're going to have to experiment and see, but I could at least customize it, maybe tell it to more of like, don't suggest anything with older versions of macOS, or I don't know. I'll have to play around with it, but it's a start, and it's kind of neat that, you know, I guess it's Meta's version of what ChatGPT kind of got, but they're making it kind of easy.
I wonder,
I'm sure there'll be ads involved, you know.
Of course. I wonder if you could add a line to the effect of give answers only found via macmost.com.
Yeah, so every time I update the prompts, the prompt information it's got, it resubmits, and it says something like 10 minutes, takes 10 minutes for the changes to your bot reviewed. So it's like I can't, you know, unfortunately with ChatGPT, I could actually do that in real time. I could change the prompt and say only use stuff from macmost.com. Try to sound like Gary Rosenzweig, you know, talks or whatever in the transcript or all the videos, blah, blah, blah. And I could just see how it changes. But with this, I would have to probably come up with a lot of stuff and then submit it and then try it. And then, you know, it would be a much slower process. But it's, I thought I'd point it out. It's kind of interesting. I guess what I'm secretly hoping is that with Instagram doing it, so Meta's got this, that maybe ChatGPT comes out with theirs. And then I could, you know, use somebody else's, you know, because I'd rather pay ChatGPT $20 a month or something and then have one that I don't feel there's like an ulterior motive of gathering people's data and stuff like there is.
Meta.
I mean, I don't even use the MacMost Facebook page. I don't even post that anymore. So I, you know, certainly don't want to be sending people off to Instagram to ask a virtual Mac expert questions. I don't know. Anyway, I thought it was worth mentioning.
Yeah, definitely interesting. I'm going to have to take a look at it after we're done.
Yeah.
So we're introducing a new.
Yeah, I like it.
Needed. Yeah, I noticed you jumped on it right away. A new as needed segment to the TEH podcast, and that is the Get Off My Lawn segment. there's no secret that Gary and I have been in the industry for a fair amount of time. So we've seen a lot of things, we've seen a lot of changes. Speaking for myself, you know, some people would consider me an old fart. So with that in mind, we have to live up to that reputation and complain about things. The reason this came up is because I was talking about podcasts earlier, and it dawned on me that there is apparently a new word that people are using instead of podcasts, and that is pod.
Yeah.
In other words, they're just referring to, you know, I'll talk to you on the pod, or have you listened to the latest pod, which honestly, it grates. I get it. The language changes, whatever. But it just grates. And what's funny is that since we ended up with Instagram, in the previous segment, No. It's Insta. Apparently the extra syllable is too much. And again, this is something that I just don't get. It grates. I'll get used to it, but.
And they picked the wrong word too. If they're going to shorten it, they should have shortened it to cast, because that's the actual word that applies.
Well, and what's weird is
pod comes from iPod, and there aren't any iPods anymore.
And get living in the Pacific Northwest, to me, a pod is a group of killer whales.
Oh yeah, there you go. I tried to find one similar to yours, and I have so many. It was hard to pick, but it so bugs me that with autocorrect everywhere. It's so hard to make a spelling mistake. If anything, you make a mistake of a wrong word because it autocorrected a badly typed word to something else, right? But that's getting rarer as context is being used more. But yet, it seems that in particular on Reddit, people. I assume they've turned off autocorrect completely. So they're just getting the raw, you know, characters they type. Because so often I see, and particularly in the title of posts, misspelled words, like a word that is not a word, the number of letters, it's just wrong, right? It's a misspelled wrong word. And First, I don't get, like, why turn off spell check? Turn off spell check if you are a expert speller, right?
Right.
You don't need it, but clearly you do. The other thing I don't get is most people don't sit. It's not like Reddit is where you chat all day, where you go back and forth. I understand if you're going back and forth and they send 100 messages between you and your spouse in a day. It's like, yeah, you know each other. You know what you mean. Just go, 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 go. But if you're posting to Reddit, it's probably the only thing you're posting to Reddit that day. And thousands of people are going to see it. At least look at it. Right? I mean, the weight of, you know, when you post something, it's like if I'm posting to one person a text message, big deal. If I'm putting something out there in public, I mean, I'm not saying proofread it like you're like a grammar professional or something, but glance at it and at least see that there's like a red underlined word telling you that that's not a word. I don't know. Anyway, there you go. Get off my lawn.
Yes, exactly. On the flip side, yes. Ain't It Cool is our regular segment. This one's a little weird, and I could have sworn I mentioned this one before, but apparently I didn't because I did look through our archives. This is very, very different. It's Rail Cowgirl. It's a channel on YouTube. And the best description I can give to you, it is that it is Norway train ASMR. What this individual does, she's apparently a conductor on a train and, you know, regular multiple different routes and so forth. And she sets up her camera in the cab, front facing, and just records the entire trip. So she'll have, you know, like 4 hours from Oslo to, I don't know, somewhere else. And that's what you see. And it sounds really boring until you start watching. I started watching, you know, just a couple of the months ago. And I happened to have one on our TV a couple of days ago when my wife was in the room and she thought it was kind of silly. And then a few minutes later, she said, you know, it is kind of mesmerizing. It's very therapeutic. It's very calming. Yeah, anyway, the link is in the show notes. It's Rail Cowgirl. There are others, from other places, but this is the one that I started with and it's a good place to start.
Cool. I started watching a new TV show. It's only the first three episodes are out, fourth one this week. It's on Apple TV Plus and it's called Sunny, and it's about AI. So, you know, just so we can stay on topic. No, but it's interesting. It stars Rashida Jones, and she's the only Western character on the whole show. She's an American. The whole show takes place in Japan. Everybody else in there, you know, in the show is in Japanese. And she moved there well before the show began. So, but you see everything pretty much from her perspective. So there's plenty of English, there's some subtitles, but what's interesting about the show is it takes place in the near future. Things are pretty much the same as they are now, but all the personal technology is different. There's not a phone in sight, no phones. It's people carry around this thing called the device, and it's basically one AirPod that goes into your ear and then a little pad where you can, you know, just swipe with your finger and characters or words or letters or directions, things like that, like a trackpad with one AirPod. And there's no screen. So there's a lot that's audio and video. There seems to be TVs in walls a lot. So when a character wants to actually see something, it just appears on the nearest TV. You know, and then they're swiping on their little device and swiping through images, for instance, on the TV that's in a wall in front of them. And then they'll put the device away and the TV shuts off and they walk away. And in addition to that, there are these robots. And that's part of the main point of the show. Sunny is a robot actually given to this woman. And so these AI robots are walking around and they're kind of, they almost look like, the same kind of robots you would have seen in 70s or 80s, you know, movies. They can move around on little tracks and they've got arms that could do various things, and they have a screen for a face. that could usually, and usually all the screen shows is two eyes, a nose, and a mouth with a facial expression, and in just one color too. So it's kind of interesting, but they talk just like normal people. So with expressions and all of that, and the way they interact is kind of interesting. And the show is very much about these bots. And the main character is not into technology at all. So she really doesn't want to have much to do with any of this, but she's kind of forced to.
Right.
It's an interesting, fascinating show. It feels like a slight alternate reality from ours. I'm sure there's a lot of things in there that tech people are taking note of, like, you know, well, that might be a better way to actually accomplish that task is to have it this way. And this is how we can do audio only and not have a screen in your pocket, but actually just have an AirPod in one ear. And just maybe you could do a lot of stuff with just that, you know, and not have to have, you know, a whole screen. Anyway, it's definitely really good. And on top of that, it's a mystery. There's a whole mystery. The story is a mystery, the plot.
Interesting. Yeah. Might be time for me to re-up my Apple TV subscription. I've been waiting to reach critical mass on a number of series that are there. So
yeah,
This is another one. In terms of blatant self-promotion, I'm going to point to an interesting article this week. It's Should I Update to Windows 11? It's askleo.com/135037. It's an article that I'm updating right now about every 6 months or so, just because the landscape keeps changing a little bit. The end of support date for Windows 10 looms towards October of next year, a little over a year from now. So there's a lot of should I or shouldn't I questions that keep coming by. What are the implications? What are the workarounds? All that kind of stuff. So anyway, should I update to Windows 11?
Cool. I've got a video on how to erase and reset your Mac. It's a very commonly asked question. It's getting asked a lot more, I think, because it changed in recent years how you do it. It's very easy to do now. You go up and you could choose the menus and choose to erase your Mac, whereas before you had to like reboot in a certain mode and all this stuff. So anyway, I did a video on that. So instead of answering people's questions, I could just point them to it.
Yeah, that's probably one of the reasons so many of our videos and articles exist.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
It's funny because I have done this exactly once on a Mac. I've got my old Paint Can Mac Pro down in the basement. It used to be my desktop machine. And uncharacteristically, it just started to become a little unstable. And because how I was using it had changed so dramatically since I had started using it, I did the Windows equivalent of a reformat reinstall. Mm. And of course, it's been much cleaner, much more stable since then. But, you know, it was probably a good 6 or 8 years that it took me before I did the reformat reinstall, which I suspect is something that very few Windows users can say.
Yeah.
So I think that pretty much wraps us up for another week, don't you think?
Yep.
As always, thank you for listening, and we will see you all again here real soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
The show notes for this week are at tehpodcast.com/TEH226. If you have a comment or question for us, be sure to leave it on the show notes page. The TEH podcast is hosted by Leo Nottenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com and edited by Connie Delaney. I'm your synthetic announcer, Adam, from 11labs.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you here real soon.